Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is On Air Daily News for Monday. And this is June 26, 2023, and I'm Naima Latif, bringing you coverage of the White House and joining Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre for a press briefing. Let's join her now as she approaches the podium.
Good afternoon, everybody. So a couple things at the top before we take questions. Today marks the anniversary of three landmark Supreme Court cases, which were consequential in affirming the basic truth that every American should have the right to marry the person they love. 10 years ago today, the court's ruling in United States v. Windsor v. Hollingsworth v. Perry made significant strides laying the groundwork for marriage equality in our country. They were followed 2 years later by the Supreme Court's ruling of Obergefell v. Hodges, finally recognizing that LGBTQ plus Americans have a constitutional right to marry who they love. These monumental cases moved our country forward, and they were made possible because of the courageous couples and unrelenting advocates in the LGBTQ plus community who fought for these hard-won rights. Last year, President Biden was proud to build on their legacy by signing into law the Respect for Marriage Act, guaranteeing the rights and protections of LGBTQ plus and interracial couples, and he continues to call on Congress to pass the Equality Act to ensure equal rights under the law for all Americans. Our work is not over, but today we celebrate the progress that has been made, and we recommit ourselves to the work ahead. As you all know, this week, the entire Biden-Harris administration is highlighting the work we've done to grow the economy from the middle out and bottom up, not the top down. The president's economic strategy has powered the strongest recovery of any major economy in the world. This morning, you heard the president announce $40 billion towards ensuring every American has access to affordable, high-quality, high-speed internet. On Wednesday, the president will deliver a major speech in Chicago to highlight how his strategy of growing the economy by growing the middle class is delivering for the American people. Throughout the week and clearly next several weeks, you'll continue to hear from leaders across the administration on how the president's economic plan is delivering results for the American people. With that, as you all know, the Admiral is here to answer any foreign policy questions that you may have on the news of the day. John, the podium is yours.
Afternoon, everybody. Look, I know there's still a lot of interest out there in events in Russia over the weekend, so just a few words at the top from me. As you all just heard from the President, the United States closely monitored those events, with President Biden receiving literally hour-by-hour updates from his national security team throughout the weekend. And those updates continue for him. On Saturday morning, the President convened a call with his top national security aides to discuss the developments and any impacts that instability in Russia could have as we prepared for a range of scenarios. And the President also convened calls with many of our allies and partners over the weekend, and those calls continue. National Security Advisor Sullivan, Secretary Blinken, Secretary of Defense Austin also spoke with a number of their counterparts as well. Now, as the President noted, it was important that both internally here inside the administration and externally with our allies and partners, including with Ukraine, that we all shared our perspectives on what was going on and we all stayed on the same page. We also made clear to all our allies and partners that the United States was not involved and would not get involved in these events, and that we view them as internal Russian matters. We delivered that same message to the Russians themselves through appropriate diplomatic channels. I'll emphasize, as the President did just a little bit ago, that it's too early to speculate on the impact these events might have or to reach any definitive conclusions, except one, of course, and that is that no matter what happens next, we're going to stay closely coordinated with those allies and partners, and we're going to continue to stand with Ukraine. As we're speaking here right now, Ukrainian forces are still fighting for their country. They're still trying to claw back captured territory. They're still taking, and they're still inflicting casualties. So whatever occurred in Russia this past weekend, did not change those facts. Didn't change the facts for us, didn't change those facts for Ukraine. And they absolutely are not going to change our continued support. So with that, I have to take a few questions.
What implications do you expect this episode to have on Wagner's power and ability, both inside Ukraine as a fighting force, can it continue to be a fighting force inside Ukraine, but also more broadly in Africa, where they have a big footprint? Where does Wagner, do you think, go from here? Do you have any early read on that?
No, we don't. And we don't know the answer to your question. It's just too soon to know. We recognize that Wagner still has a presence in Africa. I think you know we have worked to hold Wagner accountable. They are listed as a transnational criminal organization. We have sanctioned them. We will continue to take those actions that are appropriate to try to limit their ability to continue to sow chaos and violence wherever it is. But it's just too soon to know after the weekend's events where Wagner goes as an entity or where Mr. Prigozhin goes in terms of his leadership of it.
Do you know where Prigozhin is?
I don't.
Ukraine is warning that Russia has completed preparations to potentially blow up the Zaporizhzhia's nuclear power station. Is that your assessment as well?
I'm not going to get into specific intelligence. I would tell you that we're watching this very closely, seen that reporting. We have the ability near the plant to monitor radioactivity, and we just haven't seen any indication that threat is imminent, but we're watching it very, very closely.
And more broadly, as Secretary Blinken said, this has exposed cracks in Putin's power. How concerned are you that Putin could now be more desperate, more unpredictable, to the point that he could take more extreme measures to maintain his grip on power?
Yeah, I won't speak for Vladimir Putin or hypothesize about what next steps he might take or might not take. I think it's important to take a step back here and remember that the Russians still have tens of thousands of troops inside Ukraine, and that, as I said in my opening statement, there's still active fighting going on. The Ukrainians are still trying to claw back territory. The Russians are still vigorously trying to defend against those efforts by the Ukrainians, and casualties are being taken even as you and I are talking. And I think it's important to remember that. So what we're going to stay focused on is making sure that Ukraine can continue to succeed on the battlefield and not speculate about what this might or might not do on the political spectrum inside Russia. As President Biden said very well earlier, this is an internal matter for the Russian system.
John, do you see President Putin as being weakened as a result of the events of the weekend?
Again, we're focused on what's going on in Ukraine. This is an internal Russian matter, and I think it's important to remember that Mr. Putin still commands a very large and a very capable military. And the bulk of that military is across the border in Ukraine, and that military is defending itself against Ukrainian attacks. And we've got to stay focused on what really matters mostly in front of us, and that's helping Ukraine succeed on the battlefield. And that's what we're going to do.
Whether there were U.S.-Russia military contacts over this?
All I can tell you is that we, through various diplomatic channels, conveyed those messages to Russia directly. One, that there was no U.S. involvement here, nor will there be, and that we expect Russia to observe its obligations, its international obligations, for the protection of diplomatic personnel inside Moscow.
Just a last follow-up on that. Do you have any indication that Russia thinks that the U.S., the West, NATO, et cetera, were involved?
Well, I can't begin to speculate what Russians think. Or what Mr. Putin thinks, we saw some social media activity by Foreign Minister Lavrov, who seemed to allude that some sort of investigation was in the offing at the suspicion of the involvement of Western intelligence services, and I think we could all spare Mr. Lavrov the effort by just making it clear there was no U.S. involvement whatsoever, no Western involvement.
I want to follow up that as well. Given the emphasis both you and the President have made today, do you think that issue of U.S. involvement or our ability to know that something was going to happen in advance contributes to the instability of the moment?
We're all concerned by any potential for instability in Russia, given the stakes and given what's going on in Ukraine. And I'm not going to talk about intelligence matters one way or the other here. The rift between Mr. Prigozhin and the Wagner Group and the Russian Ministry of Defense was playing out in public for all of you to see. The tensions, the frustrations, the anger, the accusations all played out publicly. That was no secret whatsoever. Now, what that tension does inside Russia, again, that's an internal Russian matter. What we've got to do is not get distracted by that and make sure that we're focused on supporting Ukraine.
I want to follow up on a different subject briefly. At the question and answer event with President and Prime Minister Modi, our colleague Karina Siddiqui of the Wall Street Journal asked a question of the Prime Minister, and since that time she has been subjected to some intense online harassment from people inside India. Some of them are politicians, they have associations with the pro-Modi government, and in part they've been targeting her because of her Muslim faith and questioning her own heritage. Because this was supposed to be about democracy and in some form, wanted to find out what is the White House reaction to the fact that a journalist posing a question to a Democratic leader is getting that kind of pushback.
We're aware of the reports of that harassment. It's unacceptable, and we absolutely condemn any harassment of journalists anywhere under any circumstances. That's completely unacceptable. It's antithetical to the very principles of democracy that you're right. Were on display last week during the state visit.
Go ahead, Richard.
Thank you. Kirby, so do you agree that the counteroffensive, the Ukraine counteroffensive, has gone more slowly than expected? And do you feel, do you analyze that, considering the Wagner Group will be busy doing something else, that it will help this counteroffensive?
I don't know what the Wagner Group's going to be busy doing here. Again, I think it's too soon to Amr's question. It's just too soon to know how this is going to play out, whether in Africa or elsewhere, certainly in Ukraine. And I am not. I have said before, and I'll say it again today, I'm not going to do armchair quarterbacking of the counteroffensive from this podium for President Zelensky to speak to. Our focus is on making sure that they have what they need to succeed, whether it's training, tools, equipment. And you're going to see another round of support announced from this administration for Ukraine in terms of weapons and capabilities this week. So we are focused on that. That's where our heads are.
And just to make sure, Kirby, that I understand well, the NSC, how much did the NSC knew about the development, Wagner movement towards Moscow before it started?
Yeah, as I think I mentioned to Kelly, the dispute and the tension between Wagner and the Russian Ministry of Defense was widely known. It was public.
Rolling towards Moscow.
It was all that tension was public. I'm not going to talk about intelligence matters.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Ed, and then we'll go to that.
Thank you, John. Thank you for doing this. So, what should we call what transpired over the weekend?
I think is it
a mutiny, coup, or attempted coup, an armed rebellion?
We're not slapping a bumper sticker on it, Ed.
In the U.S. assessment, was the objective ever really to directly threaten Putin or the Kremlin?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
In the U.S. assessment, was it ever the Wagner Group's intent to directly target Putin or the Kremlin?
Again, I would let the parties speak for themselves here in terms of what transpired and what motivations there were for these actions. That's not something that we could accurately or even appropriately speak to. What I can speak to is we made sure that we lashed up early and have stayed lashed up with our allies and partners to make sure we all have the same kind of perspective on this and we're approaching it from the same way, and that we made appropriate communications with the Russians about their obligations to protect our diplomats and to make sure that they knew we weren't involved.
You were describing early attempts to communicate with the Russians about what happened. Did they respond in real time to any of that outreach?
There were appropriate diplomatic discussions that occurred over the course of the weekend, again, to send those two messages.
So is the U.S. confident the Russians would be responsive in the event of a nuclear or other real crisis, given how they were this weekend?
I would just tell you, and this has been the case for the last 16 months, I mean, Russia is a nuclear power, that we have been monitoring as best we can Russian strategic posture, their nuclear capabilities. That continues. And we've seen no indication. Outside of the blustery rhetoric, we've seen no indication that there's any intent to use nuclear weapons inside Ukraine. And I can also assure you that we've done nothing, we've seen nothing that would compel us to change our own strategic deterrent posture.
But just given how the interactions went over the weekend, you're confident they'd respond in real time if there was some other kind of...
We had good direct communications with the Russians over the course of the weekend. It's our expectation that that would be able to continue going forward.
Just about number four, given all that interaction this weekend with you guys have seen, could you say right now who's in charge of the Russian military?
The Russian military, I mean, first of all, I wouldn't, it's not my job to speak for another military, but there's absolutely no indication that there's been any changes that we've seen in the chain of command for the Russian military forces.
John,
Thanks, Corinne. John, the NATO summit is just a few weeks away. How have the events of this past weekend in any way changed or modified the agenda for the NATO summit?
I think it's, again, too soon here. This just happened over the weekend. So I think I'd be fibbing to you if I told you that there was some sort of big agenda item changed because of what happened over the weekend. We'll have to see how this plays out. It's just too soon to know what the impacts are. It's going to be an important NATO summit regardless, because we are now, you know, almost a year and a half into war here in Ukraine. We've got a new NATO member in Finland, and hopefully soon a 32nd member. So there's an awful lot on the agenda to speak to, and it's a critical time for the alliance, so the president's looking forward to it.
Administration subscribed to the view as it relates to Russian leadership, who essentially leads that country, that the devil you know is better than the devil that you don't know.
I'm not sure I completely understand the question, but let me tack it this way. And if I'm wrong, you lost me there a little bit.
I'm sorry to get into that. I was just simply saying, would you prefer to have Vladimir Putin leading Russia, or an entity like the Wagner Group, or someone named from the Wagner Group leading the Russian government?
Legally, it's up to the Russian people to determine who their leadership is. And we would prefer to see Russia not invade their neighboring countries. We would prefer to see Russia, since they already did that, remove all their troops from Ukraine and end the war today, which they could do. That's what we prefer.
John, you said a number of times you defined the comment on Putin's grip on power in Russia by saying it's an internal Russian matter. Is that a deliberate decision by the U.S. government to avoid contributing to the notion that the U.S. was somehow behind this, or does the White House simply not have an assessment at this moment of his grip on power?
We're just not going to involve ourselves in speaking to an internal domestic Russian issue right now. We're staying focused on supporting Ukraine. I just want to disavow you of any idea that the reason why we're saying we weren't involved has something to do with not wanting to comment about the situation in Moscow and Mr. Putin's leadership. It was important to say it on the face of it, that we weren't involved, that we have no intention of being involved. What we are going to be involved in is supporting Ukraine.
And then there's been Brent crude increase this morning. There was higher European natural gas prices. How closely is the administration monitoring potential energy price shocks as a result of instability in Russia?
We've been watching it since the beginning of the war, actually before the beginning of the war, and we'll continue to do that.
April. John, I want to get into the weeds off of Jeff's question on weakness. Are you concerned about the instability in Russia because of the nuclear capability? If they have to come out stronger, they could use that. Is that the reason for your concern about instability?
I think you got to take a broader view of that, April. I mean, the reason we would be concerned about instability in Russia is the war in Ukraine predominantly. Yes, Russia is a nuclear power, and yes, that's of concern, and yes, we continue to monitor that. But, I mean, I just think if you look at the scope of recent events, again, over the past year and a half, there's a lot of reasons to be concerned about stability in Russia and the impact that could have on the Ukrainian people and on the European continent.
Said over the last year and a half, going back to what Jeff said, this administration acknowledged that they were shocked that it took Russia so long. They have not shown to be the power, the military might, that everyone thought they were. And then what happened this weekend, does it show cracks in Russia's military might, who they are as we perceive them?
Yeah, again, we're not going to characterize the events of the weekend or be able to contextualize it for you beyond what we've said before. It's just too soon to know what impacts this is going to have on Ukraine and on Russia, quite frankly, throughout Europe. It's just too soon to know. But broadly speaking, I mean, we're now in 16 months of war, a war that was advertised by the Russian side as only going to be taking a few days, and now we're 16 months into it. Clearly, you don't need me to tell you, but the history of this conflict has shown that the Russian military is not as vaunted as perhaps they wanted to characterize themselves as. But, and this is a big but, and I think it's an important point to make, as Ukraine conducts offensive operations this summer to claw back some of that territory, they are running into a Russian defense, and the Russians have invested in those defensive capabilities. And so, as I said in my opening statement, casualties are being taken on both sides. There's a lot of active fighting right now in the east and the south of the country. And again, not to sound like a broken record, but what we're trying to do is make sure that the Ukrainians have everything they need to be successful in that fight.
Good job. Thank you.
John, is the president at all disappointed that this episode came and went and Vladimir Putin is still in power?
The president is focused on supporting Ukraine. We're not taking sides in this internal matter. The president is going to make sure that we're staying focused on Ukraine.
He did say, though, in March 2022, for God's sake, this man cannot remain in power.
Regime change
might have changed that.
Regime change is not our policy. We've been very, very clear about that. What we're focused on is making sure Ukraine can succeed on the battlefield.
You're like when he's getting the hour-to-hour updates.
Look, I wasn't with the president when he was getting these, so I'm not sure I'm qualified to speak to his demeanor. As you know, the president very keenly tracks foreign policy developments around the world. His national security team was giving him updates literally hour by hour throughout the weekend, and he was absorbing all that information and making sure that in the context of absorbing it, he was also sharing our perspectives with allies and partners. And as I said, those conversations, it wasn't just one and done. He's had several over the course of the last couple of days, and you're going to see that continue going forward.
What happened on the conversations with our allies? You had said we were not going to get involved in these events. We would not at any point. But if this had turned to a nuclear situation, what was the conversation with our allies about how that would be addressed?
I wouldn't speculate on hypotheticals, Jackie. I wouldn't get into hypotheticals. They were talking about the situation as we were seeing it unfold. They were communicating with each other, our allies and partners, about their perspectives, what they were seeing, what we were seeing, sharing as much context as we could, and making sure that we all had sort of the same sight picture, and that we were basically all reacting in real time in roughly the same way. It was important for that to be the case, and so that's really where the focus was. On the nuclear thing, I mean, again, I'm not going to hypothesize here, but we continue to watch this very, very closely. We've seen a lot of reckless rhetoric coming out of the Russian side. We watch it closely. We just have seen no indication that Mr. Putin has any intention of using nuclear weapons inside Ukraine or anywhere else for that matter. And I can assure you, we have done nothing to change our own strategic deterrent posture when it comes to that potential threat.
Okay.
John, just on the Prigozhin status, does the U.S. have any assessment on whether his safety was ensured as part of this deal, or is there a belief that his life could be in jeopardy?
We don't know the parameters of this deal. We weren't a party to it. I'd point you to the parties to it to speak to the details of it. We just don't have visibility on that.
And then just in terms of the war itself, do you have an assessment of just how much, to what extent, the Wagner's forces have been diluted in Ukraine and what that might mean for the Ukrainian troops?
Diluted with a D or diluted with a T?
Just in terms of the size of the force in Ukraine now, and you know, as opposed to
Siphoned off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's unclear right now where the bulk of the Wagner forces are. I mean, we've seen some reporting, mostly through press and social media, that that many of them moved back across into Ukraine. But we're not in a position to verify or validate those reports, so it's really unclear where they all are and where they all might go or what they might do in terms of the future. It's undisputed, of course, that Wagner played a role, particularly in the fight for Bakhmut. They were reinforced by Russian military forces, and that had a major factor on their ability to take that town. But as I have said many, many times, I mean, Wagner's approach here was just to throw bodies at the fight, largely ill-trained, ill-equipped, and poorly led, but just body after body after body, and they suffered a lot, tens of thousands of casualties just taking Bakhmut, all for a town, which I've also said didn't have any strategic value to the Russians one way or another.
Can you confirm that Mr. Prigozhin is in Belarus, as Senator Warnock seems to indicate?
I cannot.
Okay. Can you give us your assessment of the group? Can it survive without him, or do you think that he was a central figure, that he was able to control it?
I can't give you the same answer I gave Amr. It's just too soon to know what the future of Wagner is going to be. We're going to stay focused on the group. Of course, we have to. They do operate outside of Ukraine, and we have levied lots of sanctions against them, and we'll continue to hold them accountable as appropriate.
Earlier today, President Biden said that he'd be speaking with additional heads of state this afternoon. I wonder if you can give us any details about who, the substance, the timbre of those conversations, about whether what he's trying to convey today is different or evolving from what he's trying to convey.
The call that he was alluding to earlier is to the Prime Minister of Italy, Prime Minister Meloni, and that call should be taking place just about now. We'll give you a readout when it's over, but it'll be very much in keeping with the kinds of readouts you've seen over the last 48 hours.
John, Prigozhin, in his first message since all this went down, said that he wanted to avoid Russian bloodshed and that he marched in a demonstration of protest not to overturn power in the country. Does the U.S. buy that?
We're not taking a position on Mr. Prigozhin's motivations.
Okay. And then secondly, has the U.S. been able to corroborate the allegations that Prigozhin made that he said were the pretext for this attempted insurrection? He said that 30 Wagner fighters died after a Russian military attack on their position on Friday.
From those reports.
And then lastly, do you have any, I know you said that you have no idea where Prigozhin is right now, is that correct?
That's correct.
What's your sense of where this goes? Do you believe that this is over now, that his attempted insurrection failed, not going to restart again, or are you still monitoring for the possibility that Wagner fighters might attempt something like this again?
We don't know. We don't know where this goes or whether this is really the end, which is why we are going to continue to monitor it and why the president is still getting routinely updated and will in the coming days.
And very quickly, do you have any sense of whether Ukraine was able to take advantage of this chaos over the weekend?
I'm not sure what you mean by take advantage of it.
Take advantage from a military standpoint in terms of their offensive in the east of Ukraine.
Again, I would let the Ukrainians speak to their military operations. All I would say, and it's why I wanted to put it right up top when I started here, is that there's a lot of fighting going on in the east and south of Ukraine. They are still trying to get the territory back from the Russians, and they are still inflicting and taking casualties. So the fight goes on. Now, how much and to what degree, in any given area, that fighting was adjusted or changed, slowed down, or sped up as a result of the weekend, I just couldn't speak to it. Certainly nothing discernible from our perspective, but again, the Ukrainians would have to speak to their operations.
Earlier today, the president said that he and allies had talked about planning for several different scenarios over the course of the weekend. Could you speak to some of those scenarios?
No.
And he and President Zelensky have communicated yesterday. Have they spoken today? Can you give us a sense of their conversations?
There's not been another conversation with President Zelensky since the one that we've already read out to you that occurred yesterday. But as you heard the president say, he does expect to be speaking again with President Zelensky very, very soon. And, of course, we'll weave that out to you when it happens, as we always do.
Thanks, John. The president, earlier today, you hear broadcast the message that was sent by the West privately to Putin. Is there a message that you would send publicly to the people of Russia?
This is, I think, you know, the best thing I can do is point you back to the president's speech when we went to Warsaw several months ago, and they had a whole section in there about the Russian people, and that should be our message today. This is our issue with what Russia is doing in Ukraine is with the Kremlin and the Russian military, and of course their enablers such as the Wagner Group. It's not with the Russian people. It's not with the men, women, and children that live in that country, and who didn't make this rash and reckless and illegal decision to invade a neighboring country in a completely unprovoked way.
And that was the White House press briefing by Karine Jean-Pierre, White House press secretary, and Admiral John Kirby giving an update on issues with the war in Ukraine against Russia. And as he emphasized, the conflict is not with the Russian people, but with the Kremlin and the decision to invade. I'm Naima Latif. You've been listening to On Air Daily News for Monday, June 26, 2023. And we'll continue to bring you updates of what's happening in your neck of the woods, whether you're across the country, across the world, or across the street. And until tomorrow, continue to enjoy the rest of your day.